It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tens of thousands are expected in Muhammad Ali's hometown of Louisville, Kentucky today for his memorial service. Many people have had a chance to watch or think about Muhammad Ali, the great boxer that he was, the humanitarian that he was, and in the days since his death, to reflect upon his life and the contributions to our society that he made. I'm joined now on the line by a frequent guest on this program, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus Bob Dvorak, who had an opportunity that I'm sure many people envy to meet Muhammad Ali, to interview him, and to spend some time with the great, late great champion. Bob Dvorak, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Paul. Good to be here.
I'm dying to get into this story about how you met Muhammad Ali. When did it happen? How did it happen?
Well, this would have been about 1970. I say about 1970. It was during the time that he had been stripped of his boxing title, unable to fight. So he was speaking on college campuses. Now, I happened to be matriculating at California University, the Harvard of the Mon. At the time, while I was working full-time, going to work as a reporter at the Uniontown Morning Herald. So naturally, they assigned me to do the story. And I went as probably a 20-year-old raw, green scribbler and covered the not only covered the lecture, but was able to spend a few minutes with him beforehand. It was... you know, one of those real highlight moments for a 20-year-old reporter, a college student, and just a, you know, citizen of the United States after the raucous time of the 60s and 70s.
And how was Muhammad Ali, what was the interaction like with him?
Well, you know, he's a very different person in private than he is in public. In public, you never know where the act stops and the real man picks up. But in private, he was he was soft-spoken, he was intelligent, he was playful almost, and he, I got a picture with him, and he's mugging like he's got his fist balled up and giving me a mean face, and I just enjoyed the moment completely. And very gracious with his time, which was, you know, easy. You know, a lot of people thought of him as a loudmouth, brash, bragging, larger-than-life figure, but he was very generous with his time.
And we, by the way, we'll have that picture posted on our website along with the audio from our conversation here, Bob. So anybody that wants to see a young Bob Dvorak with some serious sideburns, some real mutton chops going on there, and the champ, Muhammad Ali, who it looks like you guys are about the same height, that you might have even been an inch or two taller than him. Did I see that correctly?
Well, no. He was a larger man than I was. He had me like 4 inches in height, and as a heavyweight, he weighed a lot more than I did. But I think it was just the way we were seated. You know, in a lot of ways, because I followed his fight career and with him to the championship and saw him break through as this one-of-a-kind individual, always was inspired by his greatness. It's his ability to be the best that he could be, and you know, you pick up stuff. But I would listen to things he said, and it wasn't so much the poetry, but he would say things like, it's not the mountain ahead of you that you should that bothers you, it's the pebble in your shoe. And he had a really good philosophy that I just followed.
And did he seem at all, you know, you said when you interviewed him, Bob, that Muhammad Ali, this was the time before he fought Joe Frazier the first time, when he was those years that he spent when he couldn't box. He had been banned from boxing. He had been stripped of his title. And by all accounts, he was pretty serene during that time. But I have to think that at some point he might have been a little frustrated. I mean, what was the mood that you sensed from him?
You would almost expect him to be bitter or feel that he was a victim, which was the farthest thing from the truth, because he did what he believed in his heart. And if an individual, a man, does that, then it's really kind of unshakable. And he had no regrets. He he risks more than almost anybody can imagine. His career, his title, his reputation, his legacy, to stand up and say, no, I don't believe in this. And he kept that as his sort of like his compass, his moral compass. And he was able to do this. So I will tell you this, too, Paul. Both of us were drafted by the United States Army. Mine came later. He refused to take a step forward, but I went. I did what I had to do. He did what he had to do.
So you would not, in any way, or did not in any way, resent his decision. It was simply a matter of, as you just stated, you went your separate ways.
Correct. You know, a lot of kids had to make decisions back in the 60s and 70s. I made mine, he made his, for different reasons, and I'm as comfortable with mine as he was with his. But, I think one of the things about him, Paul, that really enhances his standing, his image, his whatever, his aura that lives on, was that he took on the establishment and said, no, I'm not going to do this. And the establishment turned out to be wrong. So I also did at the time, I did a paper on Muhammad Ali in one college class, creative writing, on the injustice of him being stripped of his title and being unable to box anywhere in the United States without the appeals process having played out. So I was in Ali's corner in the sense that I thought it was an injustice that the way it happened.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus Bob Dvorak. He just regaling us with his memories of having met and interviewed Muhammad Ali as a college student. We have a few minutes remaining, and sadly, there has been another death of a sports giant just within the last 24 hours. Gordie Howe of the Detroit Red Wings has passed away at the age of 88. What are your memories of Gordie Howe? Did you get a chance to see him play in Pittsburgh? And by the way, I'll just say that my very first NHL game was between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings, and Gordie Howe was still with the Red Wings, and this being the days when many players, if not all of them, did not wear helmets, I could easily identify Gordie Howe by the shock of gray hair that he had on the ice. What are your memories of Gordie Howe, Bob?
Oh, yeah, and the number nine. I did see him play. At the Civic Arena against the Penguins once or twice. And, of course, you know, it was later in his career, so maybe he wasn't the force that he used to be. But listen, you did not – there's two things. You didn't want to get in his way, and you did not want to absorb a Gordie Howe check into the board. He was as respected a hockey player as I can imagine. I mean, to play five decades, most of them with Detroit, and then because of the World Hockey Association, he was able to extend his career and play with his sons.
Into his 50s.
Yes, he was 52 when he played his last game. And, you know, and of course, there's the, you know, the hockey has the Gordie Howe hockey hat trick, a goal, an assist, and a fight in the same game. So, a good skater, rugged customer, and just he could score from anywhere on the ice. Slap shots, wrist shots, rebounds. He was just had a – your eye was always drawn to him when he was on the ice. And you're right, they didn't wear helmets back then, but it was still drawn to him nevertheless.
Okay, we've got a minute or so left to talk about the Penguins. There's the issue of the psyche of the team and whether they can bounce back from the disappointing loss last night. But there's also the psyche of the Penguins fans who were ready to party all over this town last night. Did the fans get ahead of themselves, and can they possibly emotionally recover? Can the psyche of this city recover from what happened last night?
Sure, all it takes is a little win. I got a bad vibe probably late in the afternoon. I thought, well, wait a minute. They're putting the cart before the horse here. People wanted to come down and celebrate history. Well, history has to happen before you can celebrate it. I think if you're gonna celebrate climbing the mountain, maybe it's a good idea to get to the top of the mountain first. And, fans are fickle. If they win, that solves everything. That's the best deodorant. There might be a few disappointments that they didn't get to do it at home, maybe if they win Sunday night. But as far as the players go, this has been a resilient bunch. If you would have told me in December that the Penguins have to win one of their last two games to win the Stanley Cup, I would have taken that. I'd say, okay, yeah, they got two chances. Who wouldn't do that? And athletes in general, I think, Paul, one of the great things about them is that ability to turn the page, put it behind you, stay in the moment. They were probably a little out of the moment for the first 5 minutes, but got their legs back.
Yeah, hopefully they can recover on Sunday night. That's when Game 6 between the Penguins and San Jose Sharks takes place in the Stanley Cup Final. Bob Dvorak, we're out of time. Thanks, and have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Paul.
Monday on Essential Pittsburgh, an interview with Pittsburgh Public Schools Superintendent Linda Lane. She is resigning effective at the end of the month. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.